Welcome to Fantasy Football Today Dynasty. I am your host, Heath Cummings, joined today by Jacob Gibbs, and we are ready to break down the 2024 NFL Draft, what it means for Dynasty Leagues. We're going to break down a tight end premium super flex rookie mock that I just did. I've got my top 50 rookies ranked. Gibbs just put his rookie rankings out on Sportsline. We might even have some rankings discrepancies, some guys where we get a little bit of disagreement. There won't be any arguing, but you know, we'll both make the case for a few different guys. Gibbs, how are you doing this morning?
I'm great, man. Draft season is such a fun time. We've got Royals baseball right now. We've got NBA playoffs, NFL draft. Like, it's a great time to be alive. I'm excited to be here talking with you. The Chiefs got a really exciting draft class altogether. Xavier Worthy, obviously pumped about that. Just can't wait to dig in here.
Absolutely. We will talk about Xavier Worthy. We're also going to talk about our favorite day two and day three picks. We'll talk about how high is too high on Marvin Harrison. I might make the case that that's not possible. How high is too high on Jonathan Brooks? Gibbs thought he was the high guy on Brooks, and I'm going to put him to shame with my Jonathan Brooks love. And like I said, we will do the tight end premium mock draft review. We also have, I think, two other rookie mocks that we are doing this afternoon. Jamie Eisenberg running those, and we'll be writing the articles on those. But we've got a one QB, three-round rookie mock. We've got a regular super flex, three-round rookie mock. Hopefully, whatever your league settings are, we will have a mock for you this week. To get started, we have three questions for our guest. Yeah, it's a Jacob Gibbs show. Everybody's get excited. Let's just start with day two. Who are your top three rookies from day two?
So at the running back position, I just tweeted about these guys yesterday. I think most people know, if they've been, you know, deep into the draft stuff by this point, how exciting Trey Benson and Marshawn Lloyd are. Two of the three running backs that went in the third round, the other being Blake Corum to the Rams. And so to me, these two have the most realistic paths to playing time, but they're also, if anybody's going to like really be a like game breaker type of fantasy guy to kind of surprise us at the running back position from this class, obviously we've got Jonathan Brooks at the top of the workhorse potential, but like these two guys and then potentially Jalen Wright really are the big play, explosive play guys that are exciting. And I think both Benson and Lloyd, particularly Lloyd, have the ability to contribute on passing downs as well. And so you're going to see them. I think you can think of them as more like Jaylen Warren, early career Tony Pollard types, more than like some impending RB1. And the fact that like their efficiency metrics are going to blow you away. And you're going to be like, why isn't Marshawn Lloyd playing more than Josh Jacobs and stuff like that? Because they're going to be, you know, at the top of all these avoided tackle rate lists that we tweet out and everything. So I'm super, super psyched for those two guys at the running back position. At wide receiver, man, there's so many guys that we could talk about. I think we'll just start with Troy Franklin because he went at the very top. Are we talking day two or day three? He was day three.
I asked you about day two, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Wide receiver, my favorite day two. Who do you have? Let me look at this.
I had Ladd McConkey.
McConkey, that's a great pick. Yeah, I love the fit for McConkey. So he and Keon Coleman went back to back. And we'll get into both, but I love the fit for McConkey because he has more slot availability to him with his landing spot. I think both of these guys really struggled against press coverage, him and Keon Coleman, at the collegiate level. And so that's a little bit concerning. And I really wanted their landing spot to be somewhere where they can get free releases off the line. And I think McConkey has that and Coleman doesn't. Coleman is probably blocked in the slot by both Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel. So I'm a little bit worried about him.
And Dalton Kincaid.
Yeah, and Kincaid, yeah. So like really, he's, I think, just going to kind of get thrown to the wolves and have to be like the perimeter X receiver. It's kind of, it reminds me of Quentin Johnston a little bit when he got thrown onto the field and it's just like, he's not ready for this role. He might be able to succeed in a different role, in a catch and run simplified role, but I don't think the role that the Bills drafted Coleman for is necessarily a great fit for him. That's backed by what Matt Harmon of Reception Perception found as well. So I'll echo you on Ladd McConkey. And then I'll give a little love to Adonai Mitchell, who's not a prospect that I liked at all. Mm-hmm. But I do think if there was an ideal landing spot, this is really pretty much it. He's got a quarterback who's definitely willing to throw deep. And he's got a low pressure landing spot here. He didn't end up going with first round draft capital. He's got other receivers around him who can demand targets. So I think it's a pretty good spot for him too.
So I put together both rankings and tiers, and within those tiers, it was like my favorite day two guy was pretty clearly Jonathan Brooks. He's the only guy who cracks tier two for me. There's only one day two guy in tier three, and that's Ladd McConkey. And then tier four, there's a few of them with Trey Benson at the top. One guy you didn't talk about that I think I just have to say at least a few words about, because I know I'm like a round higher than you on him. And when I put the rankings out on Twitter, it was one of the first questions that I got was, why are you so high on Malachi Corley? Or when I ask people what I get wrong, they say, you're way too high on Malachi Corley. This was a guy that I liked before the draft. Mm-hmm. And I've pretty much talked myself into the landing spot. I like the fact, and like the whole coaching staff, the offensive coordinator is not from San Francisco, but Robert Saleh is, like, they know what Deebo Samuel looks like and how to use a player like that. I think that landing next to Garrett Wilson really solves some of the early career route running problems for Corley, because he's not going to receive any attention from opposing defenses. They can kind of move him around opposite with the attention being on Wilson. And then the other thing is, I don't think there's anybody else in that receiving core that stands in his way if he does what he's capable of. So I am pretty optimistic. I actually have Corley in round two. I will say, if you have a mid-round three pick from the mocks that I've done, I wouldn't blame you if you wanted to just wait it out and see if Corley's still there in round three, because he's there a lot of... I felt the same way about Tank Dell, and Corley's not Tank Dell. Very different prospects with some similarities. But I think they are similar in that their production, for one reason or another, is largely just kind of being glossed over right now as we get ready to head into rookie drafts. And Dell was someone I had in round two last year, but I told people, you can probably wait until round three to get him. He was usually there in round three. What I would say that happened with Dell that probably won't with Corley is, if you skipped him in round two and then you missed him, man, you feel sick about that right now.
Yeah.
Let's jump to day three. And I just want to, like, I'm going to say the guy's name. I'm going to give you the answer to the question, because I think you've already said it. And it's, for me, it's really clear. My favorite day three guy is Troy Franklin. Gloss him up just a little bit here.
Yeah. Troy Franklin has been really a hard player to evaluate. And so my model, all the things that I looked at, really, really liked Troy Franklin. But there's some question as to how replicable his role at Oregon and just the offensive environment there, how much that boosts production and how that would all of his data might translate to the NFL level. And so then when the NFL throws a little cold water on him, he falls to day three, you know, you're like, okay, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe this is a bit fraudulent. But then he lands in a perfect spot where there's going to be playing time, and he's playing with his former quarterback. We've already seen him post these absurdly efficient rates with. So yeah, I think it's wheels up. It's hard not to be really excited about Troy Franklin for fantasy. He's another guy who struggled against press coverage. Oregon was really smart and really moved around a lot and was able to get him free releases at the collegiate level. And so it wasn't as much of a problem for him as some of these other guys when it comes to actual production. But yeah, if you do look at his splits, he was, you know, kind of struggling against press coverage. And I think that makes sense given his frame. But he lands in a spot where there's already a true X receiver in place in Cortland Sutton. And so he won't have to do a lot of the big boy perimeter stuff. I think they'll be able to move him around more in the flanker in the slot. And so it's just a really exciting spot for him, and a guy who definitely could come in and produce right away. It's going to be really interesting, because we've got Franklin, we've got Marvin Mims, these two guys that the analytics community are just in love with. I don't know what you can actually project this offense for. Like, it's going to be probably one of the worst offenses in the NFL, right?
Well, I don't know. I made the joke that I really do, not even a joke. I really do think we're going to get like 8 weeks into the season, and there's going to be a tweet from someone saying that Bo Nix has been the best rookie quarterback so far because he's completing like 68% of his passes.
Yeah.
So I think they're probably going to be bad in terms of scoring points. I think there's going to be a lot of catches available. For PPR for a wide, and I'm not sure that Cortland Sutton's going to be that guy that's seeing 140 or 150 targets. So I think there's a huge opportunity, just probably more of a PPR, full PPR opportunity than anything else.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited for him.
Is he the only, and you, this may be a tough question because you're going to have to think for a second, but is Troy Franklin the only day three player from the NFL draft that should go in round two of rookie drafts?
Yeah, I actually have him as like a borderline round one guy, which is probably too high. I need to adjust to the draft capital, but I just do love the landing spot for him so much. So Javon Baker is the other name that I would bring up. I have Baker pushing into that range as well. I actually have him ahead of Malachi Corley. So yeah, we're definitely going to have some wide discrepancies in our rankings. I'm pretty excited for Baker. Did you like him from a prospect profiling standpoint?
I think he is one of those guys that came in with like the super wide range of possibilities. Mm-hmm. It's not difficult with the way that his college path went to imagine that Javon Baker just never accumulates stats or fantasy points in the NFL. And it's also possible that I tweeted this. It's also possible by like week five, he's the number one wide receiver on the Patriots. I think he has the talent to do that. Mm-hmm. Seems to have had a little bit of trouble fitting in. And so I don't know. I still have Polk ahead of Baker. I guess you have Baker ahead of Polk.
Where is Polk? Yeah, I have Baker three spots ahead of Polk. Baker and then Roman Wilson and then Jermaine Burton and then Jalen Polk. That's kind of okay for me.
Yeah. So we'll get more into those guys in just a minute. Let's get to the third question, because there is a guy who was drafted in round one that I think some people are going to have Baker higher than him. Some people are going to have Corley higher than him. Some people are going to have Burton higher than him, because he might have been the least popular round one pick. Xavier Leggett goes to the Carolina Panthers. The landing spot's part of it. The fact that it took him 5 years to break out in college is part mm-hmm. of it. And so I've got a challenge for you. You got to sell me on Leggett as a good pick in your rookie draft without saying the words draft capital.
Yeah, we talked about Leggett the last time that I was on FFT Dynasty. I love him from a prototype standpoint in terms of the things that he can do, the ways that he can win, the size-speed combo. And then I really do believe in the production that we got in the fifth-year breakout being replicable. I think that he can do that in some semblance of that at the NFL level and then potentially develop that into even more. I think that, the fifth-year breakout is concerning, of course, but contextually, I think that we can explain a lot of it. Brett Coleman, Hayden Winks, both have done a good job doing that. I've linked it in several of my articles when I write about Leggett. So you can look into his story, and I think it makes sense why it took him so long to have this breakout. And when he did break out, it was truly an immense breakout where he was doing all the things you want to see. There's still some refinement to his game that needs to happen, and that's a little bit concerning with an older prospect. But in terms of what we saw on the field last year, he was really, really dominant. He was, in terms of beating man coverage, it was the third best season that we've had over the past 7 years, behind only Marquise Brown and CeeDee Lamb. Really, really excellent against press coverage as well. Only Devontae Smith and Mike Williams turned in better data against press coverage in terms of single season production. So I really, really like the prospect. I think it's a pretty good fit. I think, you know, they're excited for him. Obviously, I'm not able to, say draft capital, but like the investment is real. And so I think that there's a plan in place here. And so when it all comes together, it's still a risky profile because of the age and all of that. And like maybe some route running concerns, but I think the upside makes him worth taking a shot on. I'm really high in him relative to consensus. I have him ranked 10th overall for non-superflex.
I do think Azer would have given you the buzzer there for saying I'm not able to say the words that you were not able to say. But no, very good job. That's the pot. Like they're probably not going to get the positive side case for Leggett from me, and that's kind of the reason that I want to discuss some of our positions that are different. Not that I want to try to convince you that you're wrong, but just because I want them to hear the positive side of some of these guys that I don't love, or maybe the negative side of some of these guys that I do love. I wonder, because he is 23 years old already, do you think that there's a possibility that he comes in year one on a team with Diontae Johnson and Adam Thielen and sees more than like 80 targets?
I think that there's a possibility. It'll depend on like how functional the offense is.
Right.
And I'm kind of coming around, and this might just be hopium, in the middle of the summer that really isn't like worth having. But if the offense can move the chains, I think that there's a possibility. And I also think that he could be really, really efficient with his looks, because I think it's going to be a lot of design targets. And I think he's just really, really good on down the field looks.
Is so you think, because we get the Canales offense here. So he's in the Mike Evans role. Deontay's in the Chris Godwin role. And we're hoping Adam Thielen doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think it's something like that, but I think that they're going to get him more designed stuff as a pre-snap motion guy than Mike Evans does.
Okay.
I'm pretty intrigued by what the role might be there.
There is your Xavier Leggett optimism for the day. Let's take our first short break. When we get back, I've got some optimism of my own. So I did not put together my top 50 super flex rankings with the ideas that I wanted to have a couple of hot takes at the very top so that everybody would click it. But I did end up with a couple hot takes up top, and so I would like to explain them, because I feel pretty strongly that at the very least they're understandable. And the first one is Marvin Harrison Jr. is a reasonable pick at 101 in a super flex league. I honestly think taking him over Caleb Williams, taking him over Jaden Daniels, even in a league where you can start two quarterbacks, could make sense in the right context. And part of the reason comes back to when I put together my 2024 projections.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking about Leggett and can he get 80 targets in year one? And that's like rookie wide receivers. A lot of times it's a slow first half of the season, and then the second half we start to see who they are. And then year two, they become a real dude. I project Marvin Harrison as wide receiver 9 right now, mm-hmm. as a rookie. He's 21 years old. It does not seem unreasonable when we're talking about what we're projecting. It looks like we may have a 10-year runway as a top 12 wide receiver. And it 3 years from now, I don't think you or I, either one, would want to bet against him becoming the best wide receiver in fantasy football. Like, he has that type of upside going to the perfect situation, drafted number 4 overall. He might have 150 targets in his very first year in the NFL. The whole appeal of quarterbacks in dynasty, I mean, in super flex, it's different because you need more of them, so there's more appeal, but it's that you could have elite production for a decade. And I just think that exists with Marvin Harrison, and he's less risky than the quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think that's all fair, man. I'm so excited for him. So yeah, I actually have him a wide receiver 8. I only have CeeDee Lamb, Tyreek Hill, Jamar Chase, Amon-Ra St. Brown, AJ Brown, Garrett Wilson, and Puka Nacua ahead of him. Do you have Nico or Justin Jefferson maybe?
No, I have Jefferson ahead of him, yes.
Yeah. Which is insane. I don't remember ever projecting a rookie this high.
Right. And so that's the thing, is like, It does factor in whether we're going to have to wait a year to use this guy as an elite stud or if he's just boom. And I don't think, like, there are people who think I'm a little bit too low on Caleb, having them ranked as like high-end QB2s, Caleb and Jaden in their rookie year. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more likely that Marvin Harrison's top 12 than those quarterbacks are top 12 this year.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I do have Caleb as my 101. It's going to be really interesting to see how his rushing rates translate in the NFL, if he's going to run more, because we know he has the skill set to do it. I just love the landing spot for Caleb so much. So we say, like, I haven't had a receiver ranked this high that I can remember in their first year. I don't remember ever a quarterback being drafted this high that has even close to this good of a supporting cast that he's landing with. Am I off on that? Am I just getting too excited about the receivers? Like, the group that he has there in Chicago, I think this offense could like really click, and they all fit together well.
It's really interesting, because I have a couple of questions. If he is like follows the normal development arc and just isn't, because rookie quarterbacks often struggle more than rookie wide receivers.
Yeah.
So if he takes a year before he really becomes someone who's a high-level NFL passer, then Keenan's already probably gone anyway. Mm. But like, so much of what they have in Keenan Allen, and I think probably what they'll try to do with DJ Moore, is can Caleb Williams get the ball out on time? Mm-hmm. He in college, like, the biggest knock on him was he took way too many sacks, and he dropped back and just ran around way too much. And that, as we saw in Chicago with Justin Fields, that didn't work out so well. So if he can be on time with everything, and just probably takes away from some of the scramble numbers, then yeah, I think that the situation for a passer is absolutely incredible. I'm not, that's the thing, is like the Harrison ranking at 101 is not necessarily doubting Williams or Daniels. I think in Dynasty, I have them as QB 10 and QB 11, maybe QB 9 and QB 10. But Harrison comes in at like wide receiver 4 or 5. And I feel better about his floor. I think his upside is the best wide receiver in fantasy football.
Yeah, I like it. I don't think it would be any surprise at all if like this time next year, he's like the 101.
Right. So this one is more controversial, but Jonathan Brooks came out as pick number 6 in Superflex. I think you have him at 7 or 8 in one QB, 9 in Superflex. You had him at 6 in one QB. I think the difference, and what I said this coming in, that if it wasn't for the ACL, like Jonathan Brooks was for me head and shoulders above everyone in this class. And I think he would have been in consideration, I said, for like that late first round pick that we've seen some running backs get to. And then for the NFL to, and it was just like one team, I know it was the Panthers, but for the NFL to make Jonathan Brooks the RB1 in this class, even when he's not fully recovered from ACL, to get that round 2 draft capital. And I think to go to a situation where he absolutely has the opportunity by like week 6 or week 7 to be, you said it, a workhorse running back. And then what happened with the rest, like the rest of the class and the rest of the running back landscape, a 20-year-old running back that I think could be a workhorse is just by definition top 10 in dynasty running back rankings. And I didn't necessarily love what happened for a lot of the other guys. So it just kind of created some separation. If you're going into a rookie draft and I would like to come away with a running back and a wide receiver in the first 2 rounds, I think I'd rather have Brooks and the round 2 wide receiver, which there are like 17 of them that are better than you'd normally get at pick 12, or versus Worthy or Thomas and a round 2 running back.
I think that's totally fair. Yeah. I just have, so I think that there's a ton of risk associated with Brooks when it comes to opportunity cost of taking him this high. Mm-hmm. I think that the players you're passing on are, you know, cornerstone type of dynasty assets. But at the same time, we're talking about, so you have, I assume, the 3 quarterbacks and Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, are the only ones ahead of him?
Yes.
So we're talking about taking him ahead of Rome Odunze, Brock Bowers, even J.J. McCarthy, Xavier Worthy, Penix, I think.
We're going to have that discussion in just a little bit, but I prefer McCarthy to me.
Yeah. I think that's where the conversation has to start, is just the risk. Right. But I think if you're comfortable with the risk, it makes a lot of sense, and it might be one that a year from now, you've just gained so much perceived value on the field by selecting Brooks relative to those guys who might not have as exciting of year ones. Like, I love Odunze. I'm really excited about Chicago, like we just talked about, but I don't know statistically if we're going to get a big output from Odunze this year.
And I think it's important, like, to make that point. I wanted to get that in, so I'll just say it right now. Some people think Odunze is better than JSN, and I wouldn't argue with that. But we've actually seen JSN's value in Dynasty drop fairly significantly. Like, people said that they knew he was with Lockett and Metcalf the first year, and they weren't going to hold that against him. But I do think his value has gone down because of the lack of production in his first year. And I think the same thing could happen with Odunze.
Yeah, and it could happen with Bowers too. And that's worth bringing up, and I think worth considering if you have that pick and you're not sure where to go with it. Brooks could come out and have a monster year, but there is risk. There's risk with the injury, though, of a re-injury, of them taking it slowly with him and him not really getting the role that we expect him to. They're talking about Miles Sanders and crap like that. He should be, it seems like, just given the investment and given the skill set, a 3-down back. That's what he showed in college. He truly was, like, in his 1 year that he got the opportunity, almost every bit as good as Bijan Robinson across the board as a receiver, as a rusher. Like, so much of it checks out almost identically to Bijan. And so, like, that's the type of upside and type of prospect that we potentially have here. And I think it's worth considering that high. Yeah. I don't have them quite that high, but I've got a couple of drafts where we're in Superflex and it's going to be that kind of a decision. And it's tough, man. Like, there's legitimate upside for him to end up being one of the most valuable players from this class.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. Let's get to the rankings discrepancies, not debates, but there are some conversations that people are going to be having, these decisions like we just talked about. And the very first one is a quarterback decision. Drake May goes third overall to the Patriots. J.J. McCarthy goes 10th to the Minnesota Vikings. Most people, not everybody, most people had May ahead of McCarthy. It sounds like the Vikings would have paid more to get May than they did to get McCarthy. But the fact remains that one of these guys is now with Kevin O'Connell and Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and TJ Hawkinson, and he's going to throw 650 passes a season. And one of these guys is with Alex Van Pelt and Mario Douglas and Jalen Polk and Javon Baker, and he's going to play in Foxborough.
Yeah.
And so for you, those factors were not enough to go JJ over May. So tell everybody why Drake May is going to overcome these circumstances.
I actually really like what the Patriots did in this draft. They got a lot of exciting skill position players and I think a diverse group that they got here. And so I think the weapons are decent, but this is a risky one as well. I think McCarthy is the safer pick. Do you think that that type of pass volume is going to be available to him soon? Or are you just projecting that down the line because that's the way that the offense likes to run?
I would guess soon.
Really? I'm not projecting them that way.
I don't think, because we didn't really see a drop off in their approach when they had backup quarterbacks last year. And I think McCarthy's probably going to be at least as good as those guys. I wouldn't be surprised if he's better. I'm leaning on the fact, and this could be a mistake, because I'm leaning on the fact that they are going to make things so easy that he can be successful and they don't have a reason to go run heavy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do like the landing spot for McCarthy. I have him. So I have May 5th for Superflex and then Odunze, Bowers, and then McCarthy. And those are the guys that are ahead of Brooks. I do like the landing spot. And I can get taking him over May if you're a little bit more risk averse, but I just absolutely love the skill set with May. And I do think, you know, New England has the pieces to potentially allow him to succeed in year one. And then beyond that, I think the upside is much higher than what McCarthy brings. But it's interesting from a fantasy perspective, I don't necessarily know if that's true. Like the upside might be higher with McCarthy because of the type of volume that will be available to him in that offense.
And I have McCarthy 5th, May 7th. So it's not like I'm way out on May. The thing I've been surprised on is as I'm seeing mock draft results come in, and we're going to do a couple more drafts here in just a little bit today. I think I've seen McCarthy over May more than I have seen May over McCarthy. So it may be that when I look at, I'll probably wait until like Sunday to look at post-draft ADP. But when we look at that, I wouldn't be that surprised if McCarthy just has a higher ADP than May, people leaning on that situation. But May does have the physical tools and he could overcome. Let's talk about one more quarterback debate that I didn't actually know was a debate. But you have Michael Penix ahead of Bo Nix. I think most of us did again before the draft. I just think that Bo Nix is going to get a chance to start for the next 2 years in Sean Payton's system. And Sean Payton's system is like the one NFL system that Bo Nix is already capable of mostly doing. And I don't know if Michael Penix plays before he's 27.
Right. Yeah, that's totally fair. And if you're a team that like can't afford to wait, the Nix is the pick. I think, and it's entirely possible that Nix steps in right away, and the difference in the perceived value is like drastic after a year or two, because he gets the opportunity, and it's a great spot for him. He couldn't have had a better spot here than Sean Payton and landing with Troy Franklin.
What do you see as the potential upside for Michael Penix if things go right?
I mean, I hate to even talk about this, to put this out into the universe, because I love Kirk Cousins so much, but he is an aging quarterback recovering from an Achilles injury. So if there is an opportunity for Penix to play early in his career, he has an amazing skill position group around him in an offense that could put points on the board. And then when you add the unknown of the rushing, I really don't think we're going to see him rush more, but we've seen the athleticism, and clearly Atlanta was intrigued enough to invest such a huge draft capital into him. Like if that gets unlocked in any way, then we're talking about a potentially like pretty interesting fantasy quarterback. So like I, I hope that's not the case. I hope Kirk Cousins just has a huge year, just balls out, because I love Kirk. I'm excited for him.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty confident in Kirk, and with that contract, it's like, unless he's a complete disaster, he's starting for the next 3 years. So
it's health, right? It's only health related reasons that would get Penix on the field.
Yeah. Well, and we don't know, like, I think we're still figuring out what is the normal aging curve for these quarterbacks, because Brady and Breeze probably extended expectations a little further than they should be. Mm-hmm. I think it's possible in the next 3 years, there's a decline in Cousins' game. But it would have to be a significant one, mm-hmm. because I think you're right. Otherwise, it's just health. Now, we've talked about these two guys, Troy Franklin, Malachi Corley. I don't think we even either one have them all that close to each other. Mm-hmm. What are your, I'm going to ask you to put your negative hat on for just a second, because we've already talked positively about Franklin and Corley. What are your concerns with Corley?
That he's Rondell Moore, but worse. Rondell Moore statistically checked out as better than Corley pretty much across the board in terms of prospect profiling. And they're identical in terms of like being limited in their role. If you think that Corley can do more down the field, I haven't necessarily seen that in what I've looked at. I'm going to dig into him more now that he got like pretty exciting draft capital here in Atlantic spot where he can play right away and really try to make up my mind on him. But from what I've seen, he's just a catch and run short yardage guy. And so I don't like know how relevant that is going to be for fantasy. You have to really, really get a high volume of those types of touches, because they're just not as efficient as downfield looks.
And they did that a little bit with Gibson, but not big enough for it to be a fantasy worthy role. And the draft capital, like, it is different days, so I think it probably feels bigger than what the gap in between picks actually was, because Franklin wasn't far behind Corley in terms of actual picks, I don't believe. I like both. I hope to draft a bunch of both. Let's talk about two running backs. I see I put Marshawn Lynch. We're not going to talk about Marshawn Lynch. Jalen Wright versus Marshawn Lloyd. You talked about how Lloyd's going to have people clamoring to take Josh Jacobs off the field more often. Jalen Wright is the most fascinating for me running back pick in the draft because of what it says about that situation there in Miami. They just extended Raheem Mostert. Like, he's not getting cut or going anywhere in his role. Devon Achane set the world on fire last year, but then I had this problem at the beginning of the offseason when I was going through my projections process and I'm trying to like put the production in context. And looking at how much of Achane's production came when the game was over, like just complete blowout nonsense. And he's piling up yards and touchdowns. And then looking at the end of the season, back to back must win games for the Dolphins, and Achane's just barely involved. And now they go draft Jalen Wright, who I think can do a lot of the things that Achane can. First off, you have Lloyd just ahead of Wright, I think. Do you think Lloyd has as much upside, or is it just you think he has less long-term competition? And then do you have any idea what's going to happen with the Dolphins running backs?
I have no idea what's going to happen with the Dolphins running backs. I think it's really interesting to bring up in the context of like how you evaluate Achane, because it is interesting. I don't want to overreact to a fourth-round selection here, but they traded up. It's more than a fourth-round selection. They traded their third-round pick next year to get him. Right. And he, of course, is a perfect fit and basically really redundant, I think, in terms of the type of big play ability that he brings. But I do think Achane is different in terms of his ability to create yardage up the middle after contact, stuff like that. I think he's a more grinded out guy than Wright is. Wright is pretty much hitting the hole and bouncing. In terms of like him versus Lloyd, yeah, like Lloyd to me, the reason that I'm more excited for him is because I think he could play on passing downs and could potentially step into a three down role when needed. And I don't necessarily see that for Wright. I don't expect that for Lloyd, but I think if something were to happen to Jacobs or something like that, he could do that. And I also think he is someone who can get on the field and contribute even with limited opportunity because he'll be so efficient with his touches. And that could be the case with Wright, but I also don't know if Wright will even get on the field because of the things that you outlined. Like, I don't necessarily know if Mostert's going to go away. It seems like people are just like burying Mostert because of this pick.
I'll say it. I think it's more likely that Achane goes away than Mostert.
Wow. I guess it wouldn't surprise me at all if we don't really see Jalen Wright that much this year.
That's the most likely. I wasn't saying that I think Jalen Wright's going to take Achane's job. It's just, I think as long as Mostert's healthy, I think his role's secure. I think he's their lead running back.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't super in love with Wright when I got into his tape and his analytics. I think it's really hard to make sense of the numbers just because of the inflation effect that's happening with that offense. But he's going to have something similar here in Miami. It's the perfect landing spot for him from that perspective.
Yes, yes. Okay, let's get to the tight end debate because I know we're all excited about drafting tight ends not named Brock Bowers in this class. That's why I did a tight end premium mock this morning, just so they'd be relevant for our discussion. We've got Eric All. You've got Eric All ahead of Jatavion Sanders. I've got Jatavion Sanders as currently my tight end 2 in the class. He also went to the Panthers. Didn't realize how many Panthers we were going to talk about. And the way I described Sanders before the draft was, I thought, like, if watching highlights, he was the guy who has the plays that make me say, oh, wow, if he could just do that all the time, he could be a great tight end in the NFL. And he didn't do that all the time. That's why he fell to the point that he did, I think, what, pick 111 or something to Carolina. But I do think it's a situation where he could walk right in the door and lead Panthers tight ends and targets. That's not hard for me to believe at all. You are considerably lower on Sanders, but I want you to talk about All and why you're so excited about him.
Yeah, I really liked All. I like Sanders too. From a like pre-draft standpoint, they're pretty similar in how I evaluated them. But I really, really love the landing spot for All. I just think there's more upside for him attached to Joe Burrow than we have with Sanders in Carolina. And the stat that I bring up with All is that when he was on the field at Iowa last year, he was just absurd. It was a small sample size, so it's kind of like a Luke Musgrave's final season kind of thing. Uh-huh. But I think he's a really talented dude. He tested out well athletically. Sanders, I was a little bit underwhelmed with his athletic testing. I was hoping to see more there. And it's not bad. Like in terms of like similar tight ends with him, you could think of like Isaiah Likely or something like that as a comparable guy, size, speed combination to Jatavion Sanders. It's not bad. He definitely could be productive, but I was just hoping for more. Whereas All, like, really, I think, hit the benchmarks I was looking for there. And then here it is. I found it. Played 6 healthy games for Iowa. And during that time, he accounted for 51% of the receiving yards when he was on the field. That's Eric All. And so this is a small sample size. It wasn't a very good offense. Don't overreact to it. But, like, no tight ends that have been drafted recently are even close in that metric. The closest is Trey McBride at 42%. Everybody else is below 40. But it's like Trey McBride, Sam Laporta, really good tight ends at the top. And so like that is interesting to me. I don't, you know, obviously he's going to have a lot more competition here in Cincinnati. But I think he's a talented dude. And so, yeah, I'm pretty excited for him. He is my tight end 3. Ben Sano is 2. Do you have him lower than both of these guys?
I have Sinnott and Sanders and Theo Johnson all very close.
Okay.
And so like It's close enough to where I could see one of those guys moving ahead at any time before the season even starts. But are you on board with the idea that we're not taking any of them before round 3?
And normal, not like tight end premium. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about tight end premium next. And a couple of them did go in round 2. We'll be right back after this break. Okay. It is time for our Superflex tight end premium rookie only mock draft review. I did a 4-round rookie mock. We've got about 20 minutes. I don't know if we'll get to all 4 rounds, but we'll try. I'm going to kind of give you these in maybe like sets of 4, and then we'll recap each round after we get done with it. Round 1, Caleb Williams goes first, then Marvin Harrison Jr., then Jaden Daniels, then I took Brock Bowers. Again, it is a tight end premium league. That means different things to different people, but do you agree those 4 players, Williams, Harrison, Daniels, and Bowers, should be the first 4 picks in a super flex tight end premium? Is it Bowers over Neighbors in that format?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's good.
So we'll just we've talked about those guys a lot. We're going to talk about them more over the coming weeks. Let's get a little bit deeper in this draft. So picks 5 through 8 go Neighbors, then JJ McCarthy, then Rome Odunze, then Drake May. I know you prefer May over McCarthy, but again, I'll just the same question. Like, are those the next four guys? Neighbors and Odunze at wide receiver, McCarthy and May at quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that all looks right so far.
We are, and we may just keep this streak going. Jonathan Brooks did go at 109, then Xavier Worthy at 110, Bo Nix at 111, Brian Thomas at 112. I think the interesting thing there, and you actually have Penix just ahead of Nix, but do you still think, like, for if you're a contender at the back of round one in a super flex draft, Bo Nix is a fine quarterback to take if you're weak at quarterback?
Yeah, if he's going to fill a hole right away and you're contending, absolutely. Yeah.
And then I know you love Xavier Worthy. This is where he was taken. So just go 60 seconds on why he's going to be the best wide receiver in this class. No.
I don't necessarily know what to expect from Worthy this year, but I am excited for him long term. I liked his prospect profile a lot. You can read about it. I wrote an article for CBS Sports. So if you just like Google my name, you'll find my complete thoughts on them. I have stuff on Sportsline as well. But I just think he is more than just a speed guy. He's more than you think. He showed an ability to really dominate targets at Texas at times, and he was playing with some pretty good teammates throughout his career. So I think if his skill set translates to the NFL and we hit the top of his range of outcomes, he actually could be one of the most productive receivers from this group.
Absolutely. Now, I said Brooks, Worthy, Thomas in that order. I think you'd probably have Brooks behind Worthy and Thomas. You can answer if that's true. And then do you think it's justifiable to take Brooks over Worthy because of need?
Yeah. No, I actually have him ahead of Worthy. I think that they're very close. If I needed a receiver, I would go with Worthy. I have him definitively ahead of Thomas.
Okay. That is round one. Again, super flex, tight end premium. It goes Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison, Jaden Daniels, Brock Bowers, Malik Neighbors, J.J. McCarthy, Rome Odunze, Drake May, Jonathan Brooks, Xavier Worthy, Bo Nix, Brian Thomas. I just realized that reading all these names in the first round is going to be much more enjoyable than guessing if I'm going to mispronounce someone's name in round four. But we'll get to round two anyway. Round two starts off with Ladd McConkey. I'm just going to admit this. I had a dream about Ladd McConkey last night. He caught 5 touchdowns in his first NFL game. The weird thing was they were all from Patrick Mahomes, so I'm not sure what that means. Trey Benson is the second pick of round two, a little bit earlier than I'm willing to take him, especially in this format. Keon Coleman's the third pick, and then Michael Penix I took with the fourth pick of round two. You love my Michael Penix pick,
love
right?
That. Yeah, I would have him ahead of all those guys except for maybe McConkey.
Is there a name that like you hear through the first 16 picks and you're like, why hasn't this guy been picked yet?
This has been pretty chalky so far. The only guys that I have that haven't been picked are like people where I'm significantly ahead of consensus, like Xavier Leggett.
Right. Okay. Well, let's see if he goes in the next 8 picks. We're here at 205 now in this super flex tight end premium lane. Blake Corum is the next pick. I was, again, a little bit surprised about that one. Then we get A.D. Mitchell, Ricky Pearsall, and Ben Sennett. So Corum, Mitchell, Pearsall, Sennett. And we talked about it. We're not taking a tight end before round three in a normal league. But in tight end premium, I think this is about the right spot for the tight end two to come off. Mm-hmm. When you said not for me on Blake Corum, did you mean you wouldn't draft him that high or this feels about right?
No, I have him much lower. I have Blake Corum ranked 30th. I have him below Marshawn Lloyd and Jalen Wright.
I have him below Jalen Wright. I think Corum and Lloyd are like back to back, so I'm not sure which one. Do you not see much risk here to Kyren Williams?
No. I think it would probably take an injury to Kyren Williams for Corum to matter.
So we haven't talked about Thomas's guy, Ricky Pearsall, and who I came out pretty low on initially. I hear everybody saying, but it's the 49ers offense and it's Kyle Shanahan and they're going to make him so efficient. I really don't like drafting like completely blocked players. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the 49ers are going to get what they want for Ayuk or Debo.
Yeah, I tend to agree here on Pearsall. I have him ranked about in this range, but he's not someone I've been drafting, especially at this point when we still have Ayuk and Tebow on the table here. I don't know what to do with him. I didn't love his prospect profile, but I know so many guys, so many evaluators who do, people right. who I trust who really do love the player.
Like Thomas Schaefer.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Analytically, I didn't like what he did in college. I wish he would have been more productive and taken on a higher share of his team's targets. And so when he's drafted into a position where there's not a clear avenue to targets, that is worrisome to me, especially when we have a lot of receivers who are interesting in this class.
The final four picks of round two in the Superflex tight end premium rookie mock. How many times can I say that? Xavier Leggett, Jacob's favorite pick of the draft. Troy Franklin, Jacob's second Love favorite these. Pick of the draft. Jalen Wright. And then Jatavion Sanders goes as tight end three, the last pick of round two. So Leggett and Franklin at pick 209 and 210. Wright at 211. Sanders at 212. You love two of those at least, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm surprised where the tight ends are going. I feel like the tight ends went off the board later than expected in this draft.
Yeah, well, and I think it's the other thing that gets highlighted. And you're not done being surprised yet. The big surprise is more than a round away. I think it highlights the difference in opinion on these mm-hmm. tight ends.
Yeah.
Like you've got all at tight end three, and I think he went tight end five in this draft. I think everybody's gonna have Sennett, Sanders, Johnson, all those guys, maybe even Jaheim Bell. In a completely different order, which gives some opportunity. Let's finish up round two here. Ladd McConkey, Trey Benson, Keon Coleman, Michael Penix, Blake Corum, A.D. Mitchell, Ricky Pearsall, Ben Sennett, Xavier Leggett, Troy Franklin, Jalen Wright, Jatavion Sanders. Who's your least favorite pick of this round?
It's got to be Corum.
Corum?
Yeah.
And the receivers at the end were your favorite?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to round three. You're going to like some of these picks a bit.
These are the rounds that I'm excited for, round three and four.
This is what we're here for, right? So Marshawn Lloyd goes with the first pick of round three.
Love it.
Jermaine Burton mm-hmm. goes with the second pick of round three. A ton of upside there, too. Roman Wilson goes with the third pick of round three. And then I took Malachi Corley with the fourth pick of round three.
There it is.
Again, that's like half a round, but later than where I have him. I think you're going to find him there in the middle of round three quite often.
Yeah.
I know we've already talked about how much you like Burton, how much I like Corley. Tell people how much upside there is with Jermaine Burton landing in Cincinnati.
Yeah, Burton, similar to Pearsall, like when it comes to just like pure player evaluation, talent evaluators, like all of those people love Jermaine Burton. And so the concern was off the field, and I thought we might see him slip in the draft because of that, but really he didn't fall that far. He was a round three pick. And so this is a guy who in his true sophomore season on a team with Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey, and I think A.D. Mitchell was on the team. George Pickens played a little bit. Like there was a ton of talent on this team. He was second in receiving on that team. He's, you know, we went to Georgia and then went to Alabama. Like he's clearly like a very, very talented player. And he lands in a spot here where he potentially could play a lot as a rookie. The Bengals use three receiver sets at one of the highest rates in the league. And then of course, T. Higgins could be departing as well. So just a perfect spot and really encouraging to see the draft capital that was invested in him.
We have Patriots wide receivers that go back to back next. Jalen Polk goes at 305. Javon Baker goes at 306, at least I think a round after Jacob Gibbs would have him. Okay. Theo Johnson at 307 as the tight end four. And then Bucky Irving at 308 in Tampa Bay. I've already heard people, especially if you're part of the YPC crowd, you are going to be someone who's saying Bucky Irving is going to take carries from Rashad White very soon. You didn't seem to think Corum was any threat to Kyren. Do you think Bucky's any threat to Rashad White?
I think they love Rashad White. I'd be pretty surprised if he like really cut into his role, but I do think that Bucky Irving has got the juice. He's really good at making people miss. He can play on passing downs. He can do a lot of different things. He's got a really fun skill set that I think will translate to the NFL. All right. He's not, you know, he was a really explosive running back at the collegiate level. I worry about his top line speed limiting him a little bit at the NFL level. But in terms of just like somebody who can make plays and potentially play somebody like White off the field in some situations, just because, let's be honest, Rashad White has not been that great in a lot of different areas in terms of his efficiency. And Bucky's somebody who has been always, you know, like really, really efficient. So if there's a clear discrepancy, it might be one of those situations that at the very least, like fantasy managers are pounding the table for, and maybe we actually see him cut into his workload. But I'd be pretty surprised. I think they like White a lot.
We will finish up round three here with another running back. Three out of four picks, actually. Ray Davis goes 309. Wow. Yeah. Jalen McMillan at 310. Kamani Vidal at 311. Isaac Garrido at 312. Vidal, your favorite pick out of these four?
Yeah, I think so. There's some interesting names here. Ray Davis, I know a lot of people really like, and he might have some opportunity to split work in Buffalo. I think they're going to be pretty run heavy. I love the Vidal pick. I've got a winners and losers from the draft article that is huge. It's going to be like 4,000 or 5,000 words coming out today. And Vidal was highlighted in that. I really liked, I didn't know of him going into the draft, I'll admit, and then went back and dug into his analytics yesterday and just really, really was impressed across the board. Great at making people miss, great at creating yards after contact, and also can contribute on passing downs. And so he's drafted to a Chargers, you know, team that has some injury concerns at running back and is probably going to run a ton. And so, like, I think it makes a lot of sense in this range to be targeting him. I'm much, much higher on consensus than him in my rankings.
It's kind of fun to get a guy with Garrido's athletic profile landing on the 49ers also, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like just a dirt cheap running back at the end of round three. And, oh, yeah, he might be the best athlete on the team. And he's got Kyle Shanahan. Let's recap round three. Marshawn Lloyd, Jermaine Burton, Roman Wilson, Malachi Corley, Jalen Polk, Javon Baker, Theo Johnson, Bucky Irving, Ray Davis, Jalen McMillan, Kamani Vidal, Isaac Garrido. On to round four. Again, three out of four picks are running backs. I thought before the draft, the big run on running backs was going to happen in round two. And I do think that enough things went, like the NFL just confirmed what we all thought, that this isn't a very good running back class. And so now those guys are going to go with the 3-4 turn instead of the 2-3 turn. Braylon Allen, Will Shipley, Audric Estime, and Eric All, to me, it's the fourth pick of round four. Did I just crush this draft? Brock Bowers, Michael Penix, Malachi Cordley, Eric All from the four spot. That's how you do it, folks. What are that, three running backs? Allen, Shipley, and Estime. Any hope or excitement about any of the three?
No, these are three that have really fallen. And I think it's important to be able to delineate between these guys because, like, it's a bad class and everything. And then, like, the draft capital isn't good. And so, like, they're how do you like parse between these guys and find some potential value? And, like, when you get, it's easy to like get at this point in the draft and just not know what the hell to do and just go based off ADP kind of, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think there are some names that have the potential to play in year one and could be interesting. And we hit on Vidal, Ray Davis. I think Tyrone Tracy, we haven't mentioned yet. Like, I would much rather take a shot on him potentially playing compared to some of these other guys who were ranked higher than him before the draft. But like now, I don't know how these guys get on the field. I don't know. Barring an injury to Breece Hall, I don't know if Braylon Allen ever gets to, you know, use his calling card, which is that he can play all three downs and take on a huge workload. That might just be irrelevant now. He might be somebody who never matters for fantasy. Kind of feel the same about SMA. Will Shipley is the guy who's, I think, most likely to get on the field in some situations, but I mean, Saquon Barkley is there. So like all these three are just guys that I don't think I'm going to have hardly any of in drafts.
Let's move on in round four then. Dylan Lauby at 405. Cade Stover went to the Texans. Back up Dalton Schultz. He goes at 406. There's Tyrone Tracy. You mentioned him. And Jaheim Bell at 408. We've had some people pretty excited about Jaheim Bell on this show.
Me.
I don't really get it with Cade Stover at all. I think this is the point where I'd probably rather throw a dart at a running back. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned Tracy as someone who might be able to get on the field. I don't know that Tracy or Lauby, either one, have much hope of ever averaging like double-digit carries. They could be big catch guys. If the James White role was reignited somewhere, they might do that. Mm-hmm. But I don't – they're not like carry the rock running backs, right?
No, not really. Tracy is the potential exception. I think he has the size to potentially do that. I think it's possible that he makes some sort of David Johnson kind of transformation. I went and looked at his game log, and he had three games where he saw 15 or more rushes, and his efficiency didn't drop off at all in those games. He had over 120 yards in all of those games. And so, like, I think it leaves the door open that he could be somebody who handles a larger workload. I'm really intrigued by him. He's like definitively ahead of everybody else that has gone off the board in this round for me, other than Eric Gall.
Okay.
You killed it, Heath.
I appreciate it. We'll finish up with a few more wide receivers. It feels like we ran out of wide receiver steam there. Didn't have one taken for almost a full round. Three of the last four picks are wide receivers. I'm not sure they're your favorite wide receivers at this point in the draft.
I love Luke McCaffrey. I didn't see him, but I said, like, you know, right. Tracy's definitively ahead of everybody, not Luke McCaffrey. They're right in the same tier. I really am excited for him.
So Luke McCaffrey goes at 409. Brendan Rice goes with the 10th pick of round four. Spencer Rattler at 411. And Johnny Wilson at 412. Man, if we could just change the color of that player name and turn him into a tight end, then he'd move up two rounds. Tell us why you love Luke McCaffrey.
Yeah, so he's another guy who changed positions, so it's hard to project, but it leaves the door open for potential upside as he develops. Like, maybe we haven't seen him in his full form yet, you know? And what we saw last year was really exciting from him. He won in a lot of different ways. I was really encouraged when I dug into his data. And I think the landing spot is pretty exciting here as well. I think the draft capital investment is higher than most people expected for kind of an older project type of player. I don't know. I think, to me, he's like a round three guy. Like, I don't see that much difference between him and some of these other guys that went off the board ahead of him. Like Jalen McMillan, I'll just point out him. Like, I think there's much more potential for playing time for Luke McCaffrey, and I also like his analytical profile better in terms of potential upside, in terms of the type of role that he can play, the diversity that he can bring to the field.
Awesome stuff. So wrapping up round four, Braylon Allen, Will Shipley, Audric Estime, Eric Ault, Dylan Lauby, Cade Stover, Tyrone Tracy, Jaheim Bell, Luke McCaffrey, Brendan Rice, Spencer Rattler, Johnny Wilson, and the favorite picks in that round from Jacob Gibbs, Eric Ault, Tyrone Tracy, and Luke McCaffrey. Gibbs, thank you so much. We got through it just slightly under an hour. That was a four-round Superflex tight end premium mock draft. We'll have a regular Superflex mock on the site a little bit later today or early tomorrow. We'll have a one QB variety as well. Tell everybody what you have coming up, Gibbs, and where they can find your work.
Yeah, it's all in Sportsline. The winners and losers from the draft article is coming out. I've got player profiles for running back, receiver, all the positions that I'm going to update that go really in depth on each guy. So if you want to learn more about these players, I've been digging in to provide as much context as I can. I want to shout out one guy who didn't get drafted in this that I meant to talk about at some point. Malik Washington, okay, out of Virginia, Miami. We already talked about Jalen Ryan, like how excited we are by these guys. Mike McDaniel was really excited when he drafted Malik Washington. And I think he's somebody who could play right away. He was number two in PFF receiving grade last year behind only Malik Nabers, if I remember correctly. Really, really productive, really speedy guy who I think his if he gets on the field, his skill set might translate to fantasy really well as a catch and run guy who could potentially get targets. We haven't really seen that in Miami. It's basically been super, super concentrated on only the top two guys. So it takes some projecting. But I think, like, if you he didn't even get drafted in this, you know what I mean? So if you're at the right end of your draft, like, he is a name to keep in mind. I think he's somebody who might play really well in preseason, get a lot of buzz, and like people get excited about these Miami guys, you know? So like it wouldn't take much at all for his perceived value to just like shoot much, much higher than it is right now. I think this is the time to buy.
And I do have him at 47 overall, so he should have been drafted one spot within the top 48. And I will say that I know he was a name that showed up in the chat a lot before the draft. Whenever we'd talk about 17 wide receivers, there was always somebody saying, why didn't you talk about Malik Washington? We're going to have to talk about him more if he earns any type of role in that Miami offense. Thank you for everybody who was in the chat today. It was an active group. I appreciate you all listening on the podcast. This week, we will have kind of a change in programming again. I believe we will be recording on Thursday evening. I'm driving somewhere far away for a basketball tournament this weekend. So we will put that information out on Twitter. The podcast will show up at the same time on Friday. We will talk to you on Thursday.